So it's February 2021, and we have Adelaide Plains Writers Group members here, and we're here to talk about books, rule breakers. We're talking about rule breakers.
We're all rule breakers, you know.
Oh, if we have to be, for sure.
I am going to confess, I once ruled a book up in red instead of blue when I was in high school. I know.
Michelle,
I know. I'm such a rebel.
I'm trying to think what I've done. No.
I'm wondering, can we do Ghana Welcome?
Yeah.
We'd love you to.
So I guess we would like all our gorgeous listeners to know that the land that we're actually recording our podcast on today is the traditional land of our Ghana people. And we just want to acknowledge that their heritage beliefs and that the Ghana people's beliefs of the past, present and future are important. And we also want to acknowledge the local Narrindjeri group and the Paramanx as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm Carolyn, President.
Michelle.
I'm Michelle, excitable member.
Jeanette, the one with the big stick going, do the right thing. And I'm Marie.
Okay, so we recently had our first Gula Pots at the Pub event, which was awesome.
For 2021.
Of course, sorry. First one for 2021. And we learnt from Margaret Clark, who came all the way from way down south near Victor. I can't remember exactly where it is, but she's down Victor Harbour Way. And she came and told us all about the Rondeau form of poetry. And it's a tricky one. I've been trying to write them. I wrote one. We all wrote one together, all the people who were there.
Yes, and it was interesting. I thought working as a group to do it was a great thing. I would have really struggled to do it on my own.
Yes.
But as a group and talking about the choice of different words and what would work and things.
Because you have to get the beat right, you have to get the rhymes perfect, and you have to remember to put the refrain part in but it was very interesting.
Yeah, it was different from anything that I normally write.
It's a rhyming form of poetry, but it's not as simple as a bush poem, that's for sure.
No.
The other news that we've got is that we are in the thick of planning the Festival of Words, which has been fantastic. There's lots of really fabulous stuff happening, and so that's very exciting.
Last weekend in July, that's what you're going to be doing, people. You're coming along to our festival. It's going to be fantastic.
It is, yes. And people who've heard about it are really quite excited and very supportive.
It's a very good program. It should be really good this year. I've got a few interesting news stories. So the only notable anniversary in February is February the 23rd is the bicentenary of the death of John Keats in Rome.
Now, in news, I think one of the most amusing ones, a descendant of Dante has begun legal proceedings in Italy to clear his ancestor's name of the charge of corruption 700 years ago.
Oh, gosh.
Illegally, they can do that. So, in 1302, Dante was sentenced to death as a result of political factionalism. So, he belonged to a faction that had lost power, and the faction that gained power obviously went out of the way to convict those of the opposing faction, and so
harsh but necessary.
Maybe
that's harsh. Mm.
The sentence wasn't carried out.
But he did. He did die anyway.
Sometime in the last 700 years, yes.
He was bound to, as we all are.
The poet Amanda Gorman, who wooed the world on Inauguration Day in the US, has signed a modelling contract after her
And various other things.
Mm.
It's not just her looks, her voice, performance. She was awesome.
Yes, she was. The Costa Book of the Year award winner was Monique Joffrey's The Mermaid of Black Conch, a magic realist novel written in Creole English. That was announced last month.
Oh, cool.
A non-fiction one, Napoleon's account of the Battle of Austerlitz, written while he was in exile in Saint Helena, just sold for €1 million in Europe. Not a pleasant story, this one. The author Nora Roberts has been subjected to online abuse because a Me Too activist actor, Alyssa Milano, was cast in a Netflix adaptation of her novel Brazen Virtue, which shows some disturbing things that are happening in today's world. I know, it's awful, isn't it?
Doesn't that just highlight the need to continue with that fight?
And a more pleasing upnote story, Writers Trust of Canada has renamed the annual fiction award the Atwood Gibson Prize in honour of Margaret Atwood and her husband who passed away last year.
And we will move on to our writer's tip. We could use the writer's tip from last writing group that we discussed.
Dialogue.
Yes, using dialogue in your writing to what?
Bring your writing alive?
It brings it alive. It breaks up the narrative. So it'll break up paragraphs so it isn't just straight.
It makes it look more accessible.
Mm. And it gives the characters a voice. It actually gives them their own voice, so you're listening to the characters rather than just the writer saying.
But don't get carried away trying to get accents right, because it just looks clunky and can confuse people.
Mm.
But sometimes I think a bit of accent is important, or certain wording. It's not so much the accent, because of course you can't write accent, but where dialogue rhythms, patterns fit vary, where certain words are used that aren't used by other characters.
You don't have entirely proper English if you've got a slave who's run away at the age of 3 and never lived with humans.
Mm.
They're not going to speak in proper English.
So, we'll move on to the word of the day. Now, talking of dialect, this is Australian. So I thought I'd get one out of this collection of books. A lot of this colloquialism, some are still in use, some are not. Very bread, as I didn't realise it was an Australian term.
Well, did you see that?
Very bread.
Very bread.
Well, didn't you really?
No, I just...
Chook, I didn't realise was Australian.
No, there's a lot of words in here I didn't realise were Australian terms.
That's because we're Australian and we're so used to it, we just assume. All jokes aside, we assume that other people.
So if you have foreign people, you talk fairy bread, you're going to be interesting.
Plonk.
Plonk.
Yes, it's Australian too, apparently. So furphy, which I
love the word furphy.
It is a lovely word, isn't it? An untrue rumour, an absurd story. The firm J. Furphy Sons of Shepparton in Victoria made water carts on which the name Furphy appeared in large letters. In Egypt during the First World War, the drivers of these carts often carried rumours and gossip into the camps. Any false rumour, therefore, came to be called a Furphy.
Oh, that's interesting. Fake news.
Yeah, how fake news will go on.
Okay.
And that's from a book put out by the National Museum of Australia, Aussie English for Beginners. So, we have skip writer poet discussion. I'm terrible at following my own.
Jeez, we get in trouble.
Yeah, I'm the worst. So, we'll go back to poet writer discussion. Out of order. That's my fault.
That's okay. That's fine.
That's all right. That's fine.
That's all right. We're rule breakers. Look at you being a rule breaker.
Exactly.
Go,
you go. We're on the final section of the BBC significant novels. This finally. We're a little bit behind. So, the theme for this run we're discussing this month was rule breakers. I can start. A Confederacy of Dunces, John Kennedy Toole.
Bartleby the Scrivener, Herman Melville.
Habibi by Craig Thomas.
How to Be Both.
Sorry,
Arlie
Habibi.
Smith. Habibi.
Habibi.
That's my
Habibi.
Niece's middle name.
Oh.
Yeah. How to Be Both, Ali Smith.
Knights at the Circus by Angela Carter.
1984 by George Orwell.
Orlando by Virginia Woolf.
P. Smith Journalist by the wonderful P. G. Wodehouse.
The Moor's Last Sigh by Salman Rushdie.
Zami, A New Spelling of My Name.
Audrey. I've read 1984.
Yes.
I loved it. Loved it.
I read it in 1984.
Yeah.
I'm interested in Confederacy of Dunces. I don't know what it is, but it might be interesting. It might be a load of twaddle, who knows? Read it and find out.
I found 1984 interesting, and I could see it happening and stuff, but I read somebody was saying that it was one of their favourite books. They keep back reading it and reading it.
Oh, really?
And I'm like, no, I found it depressing. I wouldn't keep reading it, but I do feel that, wow, you know, and you could sort of see it happening. You really could. Although it's different. Like these days, the individual really has no privacy. You know, you can say, I value my privacy, but we don't have a lot of privacy, really.
You have to tell everything to go online, and we want to be online.
Mm.
Or do we? Yes, we do.
Yeah, you have to. You have to be online because you have to, you know, if you're going to access a whole lot of information and all sorts of things, it ends up being that you really do need.
And it's so much easier. If you want to find out what the weather's like, going to be like, you just,
For research, it's just incredible. I love it. Just want to know something? I can find out. It's there at my fingertips. Not spending days going to the library. And even for just the search engine alone. So if I want to look up history in trove. I can put in the keywords and it's there.
Yeah.
To do that with paper, I'd have to spend days in the library going through paper after paper, scanning through every page to find that same information. So
it'd be very tedious. Instead of being joyous, which if you like research.
P.G. Wodehouse, anything by P.G. Wodehouse is magnificent.
I've never read any of his writing.
Oh, I love P.G. Wodehouse. Oh, he's funny and he's just has this wonderful social commentary and he's a very engaging writer. A prolific writer,
yes,
very British, very prolific in a humorous way.
Fabulous. We need people like that these days.
Well, I just finished Orlando yesterday. I've been reading it all year. It's been the book I've been carrying. And it's interesting because it matches well with our writing tip because there was not a single line of dialogue in the entire book.
That's interesting.
She totally breaks that rule.
Yes.
It's very dense. It's partly why it's taken me so long to read, I think. But I have only been reading it when I'm out. It's my handbag book, so. It's beautifully written. It's absolutely beautiful, but it is slow reading. I don't think it's a book you just sit there and read quickly. It's not a page turner.
No.
You need to study it.
Do you want to read slowly and really absorb that wonderful wording?
Yep.
And the other writer whose dialogue I love is Salman Rushdie's, but I haven't read The Moor's Last Sign. Got it.
You've got so many books.
Oh, right now our house is just a storm of books because the boys of Angus and Gypsy have moved all the books out of the room they're moving into. And they're all in piles around the house. It's my kind of house. But and I love Angela Carter's writing. So I think both Salman Rushdie and Angela Carter, the magic realist type writers,
yes.
I love magic realism.
So why were some of these rule breaker books? Yeah, it's just really interesting. Like
I would have thought Salman Rushdie, in terms of rule breaking, it would have been one of his first books.
Yeah.
And Young to Children is the one that had the most influence, not The Moor's Last Sigh, which is one of the more recent.
Yeah,
I find their choice of books quite interesting. And Moore's Last Sigh might be a better book, but I think it'd be very hard to beat Midnight's Children. I love Midnight's Children so much.
But 1984,
that's
how did that break the rules? You kind of think, the rules of writing, the rules of what we thought society was going to be?
I assumed it was because, the main character was breaking the rules, not sort of falling in line with the rules. So that's... I assumed that was why that was included.
Yeah, are the characters rule breakers or are the style of writing rule breaking?
For its time.
Yes.
Yeah,
talking rule breakers, why isn't D.H. Lawrence Lady Chatterley's Lover on here?
Yeah.
That is
one
of the seminal rule breaking books.
Maybe because that was a book that wasn't spoken of at a particular time.
It was only banned in the paperback version. Not in hardcover.
Really?
They just didn't want the working classes to read it.
Irony, isn't it?
There's a lot of books that were banned in working class editions, cheap editions, but they were allowed for the upper class.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it was very political. But it was a rule breaker. D.H. Lawrence was definitely a rule breaker. He might be totally out of fashion now, but he was a rule breaker
in
his time.
So I suppose that's D.H. Lawrence. I mean, Lady Chatterley's Lover was one of the most talked about books in its time.
Does anybody know anything about the final book?
No.
At all? That's
no,
a shame.
Don't.
I'd love to know the story
about
that one. But
And Salman Rushdie's rule-breaking books, well, surely it would have to be Satanic Verses.
Yes.
Yeah.
That book caused so much trouble.
Yeah.
Why Moore's Last Sigh, which I think very few people would have heard of. It's not one of his most well-known novels.
Maybe he broke the rule by writing another book.
Well, his first book got him into trouble in India.
Yeah.
He didn't take the easy way.
No, he never took the easy path.
But, causing controversy is great for selling books if you do it.
So I guess we'll move on to writing.
Well, I have two choices. So I've got a long poem or a short poem. The Skin Cat's one or the one about the cat?
The cat.
It's a funny one. True story-ish. It's called Oh Silly Cat. Limping cat, why were you here? Do you have a home somewhere near? You prowl around. I watch and think, are you the cat Missy grabbed in a blink? A few years back, or longer maybe, but in our yard where Missy could see, she barked, you ran, leapt up high, our fence too tall, high as the sky. You clung to the fence, Missy's teeth held tight. Cat versus dog, Missy won the fight. Years ago now, but you're here again. and I play my game of Remember When.
Yes.
Adorable.
This cat, I was sitting in my usual sitting, writing, reclining, resting spot next to a window, and there it was, calmly strolling down our front veranda, and I'm thinking, if I let that dog out, you would be in deep strife, pussycat.
Okay, this is an article called Thoughts on Reducing Stress. A degree of pressure and stress can motivate a person to get things done and deal with emergencies. However, as most people are aware, too much stress can lead to physical and mental health problems. Some people ignore their constant feeling of stress, believing it to be unavoidable. But is that wise? What does stress do to the body? Stress causes cortisol, adrenaline and norepinephrine to be released into the bloodstream to allow for fight.
A chemical
or
that
flight.
You don't want.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. That's right. A chemical you don't want. These hormones cause increased heart rate and blood pressure, faster breathing, increased focus and diversion of energy from the digestion, immunity and growth systems, allowing for a burst of energy to deal with the situation. However, when stress is caused by prolonged issues, such as work problems, too many responsibilities, relationship difficulties, or financial worries, the constant surge in stress hormones can lead to health problems. These include high blood pressure, tension headaches, blood sugar imbalances, a weakened immune system, memory problems, insomnia, depression, anxiety, and stomach ulcers.
A cheerful piece of writing, Marie. Thank you so much.
Ways to reduce stress.
I'm having a heart attack now as I speak.
I'm getting to ways to reduce stress now that you know why you should try and do
it.
Yeah. To deal with too much stress, initially one needs to be aware of the cause. If you can't pinpoint the cause, then talking to a friend, family member, spiritual leader, counsellor, psychologist or therapist can help. These people may also suggest strategies for dealing with stress. Helpful strategies will depend on what is causing the stress and factors including your lifestyle, age and personality. Some of the following may help. Reducing the number of responsibilities you take on. Asking for help or support. Getting enough sleep. Eating healthy foods and drinking enough water. A relaxing or creative hobby. Exercise of some type. Perhaps walking or a team activity, meditation, reading is something enjoyable, and I've put in bracket, not the news. Spending time in a natural setting, perhaps a park or even your own backyard. Cutting down on screen time, social media, etc., and listening to music. While a degree of pressure can help you to be more productive, it is important to avoid becoming stressed to the point where it has a detrimental effect on your health.
That was really good. And I really love the tips. As somebody who deals in the well-being sphere, let people know you're not coping.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's actually okay to not be okay. Mm. Really important.
Important to talk it over.
I think...
Yeah, or just say.
Stress that.
It's in general, we tend to feel that you're showing a weakness if you say, look, it's too much for me or I'm not coping at the moment. But... Other people aren't going
to
know. And in fact, you know, they aren't going to know that you're not coping and they may be able to offer help and make things, like, easier for you, help you reduce the amount of stress.
And it's a relief to other people to see that not everybody is going as well as they seem to be going.
Yeah, but everyone is human.
I don't have to be perfect either. That's good.
Yep. I think the younger generation are much more open about mental health.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's fantastic.
It is good.
It's really good to hear.
Totally. And seeking professional help.
Nothing wrong at all with that. Oh, I mean, sometimes people get embarrassed. Oh, I don't want to say that I'm seeing a counsellor, a psychologist, or a psychiatrist. People are going to think I'm crazy. But, you know, it just makes sense to go and talk to somebody, and it may be a chemical imbalance that you've got no control over. That's one of the main reasons that you're feeling...
But just talking about a problem,
you
talk over an issue, you see it from an outside perspective, not your own. And even listening to yourself talk about it changes your perspective.
Or writing about it.
Why I love writing so much. Because for me,
it's therapy.
If I'm really quite stressed or anxious about something, I literally have to just write about it. Mm. And I tell my students all the time, worries can't live in oxygen. So talk about them.
That's
because they can't live in oxygen, you know.
Yes.
And but certainly for me, journaling's vitally important.
Mm.
So write your thoughts, and that was lovely, Marie. Write your thoughts down, you know.
Yep, yep.
Talk to people.
It is interesting, I'm looking through this book, because this is the first book I wrote, and I had gone through it and put more dialogue in, but still, there's not a huge amount of dialogue. So this has no dialogue in it, but that to read. There was silence in the forest, the silence of human absence. The forest had its own intrinsic noises, a veritable symphony of sounds that were harmonised, and the mellow harmony of sounds was a silence to the solitary prospector. Occasionally he made a noise, discordant, shattering the harmony of rustling leaves and hidden life. Most of the sounds the prospector made became engulfed in the quietude around him. Stone splashed into a jesting stream like small fragments of sunlight. The man's body was so brown and still that a rosella settled in a tree above, thinking he was a rock. Only his hands moved, sluicing through the gravel and water in his semi-submerged pan. The creek laughed and danced before him, catching shards of sunlight and tossing them about its fragmented surface. There was a sharp twang as his pan was knocked against a stone and he cursed. The rosella started from its branch. Its vibrant colours flashed through the forest like a brush stroke. The intruder looked up and saw the flame of red vanishing amid the dense foliage. In that instant, a small lump of quartz slipped under his slackened fingers and popped down into the vivacious water. The belly of that stone was of gold, and the heavy mineral embedded itself in the gravel bed of the scintillating creek, and the prospector was unaware of it. A new load of gravel was shoveled into the pan and the long fingers began to swivel and wash the fresh load of dirt. It was as though a relationship had developed between him and the laughing creek. They worked as a team. The water swirled in his pan and he carefully skimmed off the gravel that rose to the surface with each wash. Eventually, there was only dirt, which was swiveled and washed till the pan was finally emptied and the cracked finger of the prospector carefully collected the specks of gold that had fallen into the groove near the edge of the pan and its base. They were reverentially released into a small jar of water whose base was filled with a brilliant mineral. Then another pan was filled and the process began again. There was no measure of the hours and the days. He thought only of the metal in his jar, measuring his life by its value. Time had stretched out into elongated pauses. Nothing had any bearing to the human activities that existed beyond the forest. All the complicated narratives of civilization unwound there. He had fallen out of history.
Oh, wonderful. Mm. Gorgeous.
So my great uncle lived in Gippsland, fossicking, for many a year. He was convinced there was gold there. And
yes.
His poor wife and daughter lived in this bark hut in Gippsland with him.
Oh.
So she grew up being able to imitate all the birds, but having no school in the room.
Right.
Gorgeous.
So you found some, but not enough.
Never found any, I think. I don't know how they survived. I think her family sent the money that we saw. So we've just got our listeners' challenge, our Gawler icon, and I thought we haven't done Dead Man's Pass.
No,
so
I love
Dead Man's
Pass. Went for a walk through there on Monday.
It's a beautiful place.
It is.
Yes.
I've sat there in the car park and written about the birds I've seen, heard.
Yeah, when my oldest two's 37 now, when he was about 6, 7, 8, he used to love going down there and catching tadpoles and things. And we got talking to a man one day, an older man, who was talking about when he used to go fishing there. And he said one day he'd caught some fish and he had them next to him. And a water rat came up and stole a couple of fish that he caught. And so that was, was really interesting, sort of hearing stories of the past.
When there was water in Gawler.
So if listeners have got some significant books, please send them in. We'd love to discuss
it.
That'd be fantastic.
It would, yes.
Yeah, so any stories of books you want to hear us talk about, and Dead Man's Pass. Happy times at Dead Man's Pass. Did you catch fish there?
We caught tadpoles there when Sam was little. We used to go
there
all the time. Yeah. All the time, every night, I reckon.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Meditation Rock, which was this rock we'd go and sit on. I know, it was lovely. It's gorgeous.
When I was a kid, we used to go to Torrens River down near Windsor Gardens, and we'd catch yabbies and bring them home to feed our father.
Any fishing I did when I was a kid was the pretend stream in the living room. Had my tent under the dining room table.
As you do if you're that kind of child, which is Jeanette probably was that kind of
child. Imagination.
We'll have to be imagination. We just didn't get taken anywhere. So.
Okay, well, we'll wrap it up there.
Beautiful. Thank
see
you.
Everyone next month.
See you later.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.